This is the Old Mole Variety Hour. I'm Denise Morris, your host this morning. I'm here with Jan Hocken and Mike Snedeker, Left and the Law. This morning they're going to be talking about two different series. One is the television series, the crime drama, American Crime Story, it's called, O.J. Simpson, or The People versus O.J. Simpson. There's a second series, which is a documentary as part of ESPN's 30 for 30 documentary series. It's been a really quite good series on athletes and politics. OJ Made in America, five-part series, is now available to see for some folks who can stream, watch ESPN. I think that's the way you've got to do it. So we're going to talk. I may jump in because I've seen the series, but I have Jan Hocken and Mike Snedeker. It's really their segment. So Jan and Mike, why don't you get going on this, because there's lots to talk about here.
Well, and we did cover this case at the time in the 1990s, 94. And at the time we took up some of what made this the description was, this is the trial of the century. Mike, let's start with that claim. Is that hyperbole, or what? In what sense was this the trial of the century?
Well, its only competition would probably be the Lindbergh trial in the 1930s. But it was a true epic. It was the trial involved the story of Los Angeles, the story of celebrity, and a very deep dive into the narrative that's run along the spine of American history since its beginning, slavery and its continuations.
Well, the dramatic series really focused on the characters in the case itself and the trial. And in many ways, O.J. Simpson himself was off-center in the dramatic series, and I think in some ways miscast, because he was very emotionally kind of unhinged a lot, and O.J. Simpson himself projected a kind of self-possessed charisma and was cast in the culture as a kind of transcendent black figure, because he was both steely and reassuringly warm without being too effusive. I mean, he was kind of a pillar of self-control as well as a marvelous athlete. Let's start with the series and how it portrays the life of O.J. Simpson and his fame and what that represented that made this such a drama.
Okay, well, the series is five episodes, 2 hours each, and there's not a moment of fluff. It's fantastically well done. They have a wealth of material to choose from. This was not an undocumented life, and they chose really well at every step. They start off at the beginning, which is with the great migration of black people from Louisiana and East Texas. They were basically driven out of there by lynchings and terrorism, and went to Chicago, New York, and quite a few to Los Angeles. And it takes you through the history of sort of the chaotic problems with police in the 30s and 40s, the, quote, professionalization of the police force by Chief Parker.
So it's much more, in some ways, a story of the history of the police and the LAPD, which was at the center of the trial.
Well, yeah, they were the source of evidence. And the show very deftly goes back and forth from O.J.'s life. He was born on public projects in San Francisco on Potrero Hill. It turned out to be a very good football player. He won a scholarship to USC. And then it would switch back to a larger picture in which USC is a beacon of conservatism in the late 60s when O.J. is playing there. And O.J. is leading USC to a national championship, the Rose Bowl victory, being congratulated by Bob Hope for having rejected, essentially, other black people. Other black athletes like Jim Brown, Bill Russell, were trying to unite and push forward an agenda that would eliminate different kinds of segregation. It's hard to believe, but at that time, if you were a black person, you could not sell real estate in Oakland, California. So there was a very long way to go. But O.J. conspicuously refrained from doing any of that. He defined himself as someone who had transcended race.
Post-political.
That's right. I'm not black.
Hero.
I'm not white. I'm O.J.
Mm-hmm. And Toni Morrison wrote a fabulous book that for people who want a supplement to this series and want to read more about what some of the cultural studies work on it. It's called Birth of a Nationhood, Gaze, Script, and Spectacle in the O.J. Simpson Case. And she describes a lot of the politics surrounding the case and what made it the trial of the century, and particularly what O.J. represented to white audiences as this race-transcendent figure, and that the rage and the outrage and shocked horror of white audiences, including around the verdict, was a response to the disruption of a kind of fantasy, maybe like Bianca, a fantasy of a hero who kind of carried the racial history, but in a way that didn't disrupt the kind of narrative of success that anyone in America can become successful and a hero, and leaving the violence of that history behind. That's part of her argument.
What the TV show does is meticulously break down how that happened. You get to meet the president of Hertz Corporation.
You're talking about the Made in America.
Yeah, that's really the only one to watch if you're not going to watch both of them. It's just such a careful, thorough, powerful, and cumulatively very moving epic of a TV show. But you meet the director of Hertz, how they carefully constructed those images of O.J.
Why don't you say a bit about, for those aren't familiar with, how O.J. occupied a place on television in the Hertz commercial. Okay.
That's with his Hertz ads, they had them, O.J. dashing madly through an airport because speed was of the essence when you want to get a rent car. And he's always being cheered on by little old ladies saying, "Go, O.J.," or dumpy little salesmen saying, "Go, O.J., go." Always white. They're always cheering him on. And they had a now still regarded one of the most successful ad campaigns in history.
Which was risky for Hertz at the time, right, to have
There were no black people speaking for any major American corporation. So it was fantastically successful. It led to O.J. basically retiring from football after having had a record-breaking year for the Buffalo Bills and becoming an actor and a persona full-time in Hollywood, where he met Nicole Brown. He saw her at a very exclusive type of L.A. club, and she is just drop-dead gorgeous, a perfect California girl. And the moment he saw her, he wanted her. He left behind his wife and two kids and stayed with her. And he, we learned later, turned out he was compulsively unfaithful throughout, but he was mesmerized by Nicole and by all that she represented.
And that was part of the gender politics of the case. Part of what made it such high drama as the trial of the century was pitting her history of being abused by him, brutally, violently abused and threatened, and the race politics, some of which had to do with this black man who had found a woman who kind of was emblematic of a certain kind of success in bourgeois white culture, and also the loyalty to him, partly born of what the LAPD and the history of police brutality represent in the black community. So there are a number of intersecting politics going on here. How did the series deal with the gender politics?
Well, in part two, it had them connected. And as we move through their relationship, you've got all sorts of wedding pictures, wedding movies. It's they show them being very close, him being just bursting with pride and happiness, everybody being happy. But as the episode goes, it ends with several live recordings of Nicole screaming, begging for her life, calling cops. They have excerpts from like five different calls to the police, interviews with police who had gone out there. So you end up on a really dark tone. And episode three begins with the murder of Nicole and Ron Goldman, who was just an unfortunate passerby bringing back to Nicole a phone she had left at a restaurant.
So, Denise, you want to weigh in on this in terms of how the series deals with the intersection of gender and race politics.
Well, for me, it was an entire education because although I went through the trial as an adult, you know, I was there and followed it to some degree. I really didn't know any of these details. And like Mike has said, this is truly a very well constructed and thoughtful documentary. And I
on
think
social history.
It is. And it's heartbreaking in many ways. I think what's striking for me about the documentary and what I think is so compelling about it is that people are given an opportunity to speak without, I mean, they say what they think about the events. Jurors, family members, friends, colleagues, all, you know, there's a whole range of people who weigh in, and many of them are coming to some very unfortunate conclusions about this person that they've known all their lives and have loved and supported as they watch his fall and his kind of disintegration. But many of them also predict that OJ will be a tragic figure because he has set himself in terms of his relationship to his own identity as a black man and his association with not just particularly white women, but with white people in general, that he's doomed in a way. So there's a lot of really important reflection in this. And I think, you know, there's things that you don't want to hear, like a juror saying, why did she stay? You know, why would she stay in a situation like that? You know, you hear that kind of stuff. You hear things you don't want to hear, but you hear a lot of truth and a lot of really, you know, contradictory, tense, you know, there's tensions inside. I don't know what else to say about that part, but I think that
it captures that well.
It really captures this. It really captures the tensions in our social and cultural dynamics around race, gender, class,
and celebrity. Like
and celebrity.
The third chapter opens with the car chase, and they do a very clever job of interjecting in here other people who are chased or fleeing from LA cops. What the LA cops do is they ram their ass as soon as they can. They get out and they beat them up and often shoot them. I mean, but OJ, they give him like an honor escort for miles, and it's watched by tens of millions of people on television. They allow him. He's suicidal. He's still in the high heat of having done what he did. And they allow him to go deep into Orange County, then turn around, go all the way back home. And they don't kill him when he gets out of the car, which they would do in any other circumstance and have done dozens of times in before and after that.
Yeah.
And the whole celebrity note is hit right there with that spectacular apprehension, mm-hmm. and continues, of course, all the way till now.
And in a sea of voices at the time, because there's all that archival footage of support for OJ, you have a couple of voices. There's a reverend, black reverend, who says, you know, this was not a victory for black people. It's a victory for a rich guy, you know.
That was part of the Dream Team rhetoric. And there was quite a bit at the time that even someone of this stature is going to be a victim. So there's that question of, is he, you know, to what extent was he a victim? A victim of what? I know at the time of the trial, Mike, you talked about how the jury did its job, that even though he was very likely guilty, that was not basically what was on trial, because people fixated on that question. Let's close by talking some about that question of the jury, because they themselves really suffered under tremendous attack for exonerating him or not.
Well, the one strength of the TV show, among many others, is the history of the LAPD and their brutalizing of black people for decades, which was vividly presented by Mark Furman, who had made tapes not only showing that he'd lied under oath, but showing the air of entitlement and abuse and aggression that permeated the LAPD at the time. So they showed why jurors, and Rodney King had happened 3 years before, and they played that over and over, where he was beaten on public, kicked and struck, and nothing was happened. So there was a good job of preparing that. And then the whole theatrics of the trial, where OJ was converted black into a black person in order to be able to prevail at this trial. The theatrics included putting pictures of him with black people up in his house, and then a tour of the house, which is a dumbfounding thing to have done, because the judge had no reason to do that. There was not the crime scene. So all in all, I think it was just a fabulous portrayal of not only how guilty he was, but why people voted innocent, both because of their cultural history and because of abysmal shortcomings on the part of the presentation of evidence.
Very true. Highly recommend the documentary. Again, it's ESPN 30 for 30 is the doc series that they do. This is the old
and also Toni Morrison's book, Birth of a Nationhood, Gaze, Script, and Spectacle in the O.J. Simpson Case as a compliment.
Yeah,
to that.
Absolutely. I've got that written down.
Okay.
Well, Mike and Jan, thank you. And this is Denise Morris.